Well, good morning, TNC family, from my home to wherever you are. Today is going to be a great, great day. For one reason, because it's Super Bowl Sunday, a day of competition and commercials and chips with cheese dip. And did you know at the stadium today in Tampa, there will be 20,000 fans and 30,000 cardboard cutouts? Which got me to thinking, maybe I will have 30 to 40 of you packed into my house this year after all. Just cardboard cutouts of you. Hey, Richard! You're kind of quiet tonight. And Tyler, I'll take your silence as a no to my offer when I get up to get more pizza for myself. And Rhonda, you haven't even tasted my cheese dip. Is there something wrong with it? And by the way, this plan should eliminate the need to clean up the chicken wing barbecue sauce off the carpet this year and the chocolate ice cream syrup off the couch. So it'll be different this year. But I'd rather have you here. So save the date for next year. Now, a second, even better reason today is going to be great is because in the words of the psalmist, chapter 118 and verse 24, this is a day the Lord hath made. And so hints of his handiwork will be available to you and to me everywhere throughout this day if we'll listen and pay attention. Out that window, in that conversation, on that page, through that word or text or facial expression, in that flavor, beside that tree, along that sidewalk. And in these moments now, friends, as we study the scriptures together, we are in a series, as you know, journeying together through the first 34 verses of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, plus the first 3 verses of chapter 2, and by now I hope you remember the design of those 34 verses. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all the way to 34. Their design is verses 1 and 2 are the prologue, verses 3 through 31 are the 6 days of God's creating work, and the last 3 numbers, 32 to 34, which are the first 3 verses of chapter 2, are the epilogue. And today we conclude our series and explore the epilogue. But let me set up the epilogue by going back to the prologue for a second. The first sentence of the prologue, Genesis 1 in verse 1, begins with 7 words. Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim veyet haaretz. In the second sentence of the prologue, Genesis 1 in verse 2, contains 2 times 7 words. Vahaaretz haita tohu vavohu vehosek al pene. Tehom verua Elohim marahafet al pene hamayim. And trust me, I'm not trying to impress you. That went out the window when I tried to speak Hebrew week 1. But it's been fun and helpful for me in study, and I hope helpful for you in explanation. Because the first sentence is 7 Hebrew words, and the second sentence, 2 times 7 Hebrew words. And now skip to the epilogue, and I'll just read these in English. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the 7th day God ended his work which he had done. And he rested on the 7th day from all his work which he had done. And that's 3 sentences in Hebrew, 7 words each. And the number 7 is not just featured in the prologue and epilogue. As you know, it's featured in the creation days themselves. After all, there are 7 days of creation. And listen to this on day four when God says, verse 14, let the sun, moon, and stars serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years. The Hebrew word for seasons is moedim, which is actually the word for Israel's feast days. And so we read seasons and think spring, summer, fall, winter, but the Hebrews read it and said that the sun, moon, and stars will serve as signs of its moedim, its feast days. And in the Torah, the moedim days are Passover, Rosh Hashanah, Shavuot, Sukkot, Yom Kippur, Shemitah, and Shabbat. Yep. There are seven moedim that Israel was to celebrate. And if you study these seven feasts, you'll learn that most of these feasts occur in harmony with the number seven. Seventh day, seventh month, seventh year. And if you want to do the number seven justice in these 34 verses, then you're going to have to keep going because there are seven paragraphs in the 7 days of creation, and the word Elohim appears seven times five times, and the word land appears seven times three times, and the phrase light and day appear seven times within day one, and the word light appears seven times in day four, and the phrase, and God saw that it was good, appears in the 34 verses seven times. And listen now to the famous Jewish scholar Umberto Casuto. Quote, to suppose that all these appearances of the number seven are mere coincidence is not possible. This numerical symmetry is, as it were, the golden thread that binds together all the part of this section. And by the way, TNC, both Jewish and Christian scholars over and over and over again share this conclusion. And one final word extending beyond the creation narrative, moving on further in the scriptures, in the flood story, the clean beasts were taken into Noah's ark by sevens. And Noah sends out the dove at the end of 7 days. And in Job's story, his friends sit by him 7 days and seven nights. And circumcision in ancient Jewish culture occurred on the first day after day seven. And sprinklings of water and blood were performed by priests seven times. Laban requires Jacob to work for 7 years before marrying Rachel. And in the Battle of Jericho, they march around the city one time each day for 6 days, and then seven times on day seven, their parade is led by seven priests. And Balaam offers seven bulls and rams on seven altars. Naaman is told to wash in the Jordan seven times. The feast celebrating the dedication of the temples was held in the seventh month. Seven steps led up to the temple of Ezekiel. The one who comes in contact with a dead body is considered unclean for 7 days. Purification from leprosy takes 7 days. And the young of an animal may not be sacrificed before it is 7 days old. And I hope you're not getting bored, because I'll stop. I could keep going, but I just want to stop and ask, why the number seven? Why not 3 or 5 or 12? Why seven? I mean, even in football, a 6-point touchdown is unfinished until the extra point brings the score to completion. And that's not biblical. I just threw that in there. But why seven? Well, listen carefully to this. It was based on the phases of the moon. They looked at the moon and observed that a lunar cycle is 29 and a half days, or 4 segments of 7 3/8 days. And what happens at the end of the 4th segment of 7? A full moon. Completeness. And the ancients understood that there is a correlation between the activities in the heavenly realms and the things that take place on earth, which is why the Hebrew word seven, pronounced Shiva, is spelled with three letters, ayin, nun, and shin, consonants, because Hebrew doesn't have vowels in the same way we do. And the Hebrew word to be satisfied, full, complete, is also spelled ayin, nun, shin, because seven always meant completeness. Which is why on day seven of creation, the text says, thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. On the seventh day, God completed his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done. What do? On the day of completion, you rest. Which should urge you to ask, well then, what does it mean to rest at the time of completion? And here, there are two main ideas for seventh day rest embedded in the text. First, to Shabbat, and second, to Nuacht. Shabbat, which we translate Sabbath, simply means to stop working. Kind of like my first job in high school, working for Mr. Carter in the grounds and maintenance department of my high school, where I would take a rectangular card and stick it in a machine called clocking in, then pull weeds, mow lawns, and pick up garbage for 8 hours before I would Shabbat. Cease. And the sign of ceasing, of course, was clocking out, after which there would be no more work until I clocked back in. And in a similar way, after 6 creation days of bringing order to chaos, God ceases, Shabbats, from his work. Now, the other main Hebrew word for rest used in the Hebrew scriptures is Nuacht. Exodus chapter 20 uses this word, verse 11, quote, in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he Nuacht on the seventh day. And Nuacht works with Shabbat in the scriptures, but means something a little different. Nuacht means to take up residence, to dwell, or settle, which is not the same thing as clocking out from my hourly job. This type of rest is like going to a condo at the beach for a week. You know, unpacking your suitcase, organizing your clothes in the drawers, toiletries in the bathroom, food in the cupboards, beach chairs on the deck. And then, after arranging everything, Nuacting for the week. Or, as I described last week, setting up a man cave, Nuacting is what you do after the big screen TV, speakers, beanbag posters, and small refrigerator is all set up. Or, one final example, because Nuacting, I don't want you to think it's just about propping your feet up. Nuacting is what a president should do after taking up residence in the White House. The president takes up residence not to kick off her or his shoes and snooze in the Lincoln bedroom. It is so the president can begin the work of running the country. Nuacht is about what you do after you arrive, after things are ordered. And by the way, in Exodus chapter 10 and verse 14, listen to the description about the 8th plague. It says, quote, the locusts came up over the land of Egypt and Nuacht in all the land. They took up residence, they settled in, and the locusts began their work. And so we have to understand then, about seventh-day Sabbath rest, that in the words of John Walton, quote, divine rest is more a matter of engagement without obstacles rather than disengagement without responsibilities. And therefore, on the seventh day, God takes up residence and settles in for a new kind of work, which leads to the obvious question, where does God take up residence? Where is the residence of God? Where does God rest? Well, the divine place of all gods in ancient culture is always the tabernacle or the temple, and resting was always about a god entering his or her temple. And you see this throughout ancient Near East literature in the famous Babylonian creation epic, the Enuma Elish, which we've talked about. The work of creation is followed by the building of a temple for Marduk, so Marduk can nuach, rest. Again, John Walton, quote, without hesitation, then, the ancient reader would conclude that Genesis 1 is a temple text. Now, listen to this, and we're almost done the hairy work of biblical scholarship before we get to the application. But listen to this. From the most elaborate to the most simple, they all have the same general design temples did in the ancient era. Gardens, or outer courts, then inner courts, then holy places, then most holy places. And typically, there was a seven-phase building process for the temple that could take many months, sometimes longer. But once the temple was built, there would always be a temple dedication ceremony that would take 7 days. After which, the god that the temple was built in honor of would enter the temple for rest. Again, not rest the way humans need naps and nighttime sleep, because folks didn't believe that gods were exhausted all the time back then. This is rest as opposed to unrest, a restful, ordered work environment versus a disordered, unrestful work environment. And after that 7-day, 7-phase temple dedication ceremony, at that point, the temple would become the main place of intersection between humans and the divine. And if you wanted to meet with the divine, you would go to the temple. And this was true of the Judeo-Christian God, Yahweh. Only, here's what's unique about the Genesis story that we've been studying. Genesis 1 is telling us that the 7-day, 7-stage creation of the heavens and the earth is the creation of a different kind of ultimate temple, not a single isolated structure on a hill, but now the whole earth, the whole cosmos is God's temple. And day 7 is the day God enters the temple to begin his new walking. Only he won't new walk alone, because in Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, we read that after God creates humans, he new walks with them. He settles them in the Garden of Eden with himself. The text says that God new walks with us. Now, notice what happens over the course of 6 days. Stay with me. As the earth moves from disorder to order during the 6 days of creation, each day is marked with the phrase, quote, there was evening and there was morning. There was evening and there was morning. But watch this. On the seventh day, something special happens. Scholar Robert Lowry, in his brilliant little book called Sabbath and Jubilee, talks about this. Quote, the seventh day account does not end with the expected formula, there was evening and morning, that concluded days 1 through 6. Breaking the pattern in this way emphasizes the uniqueness of the seventh day and opens the door to eschatological interpretation. Literarily, he says, the sun has not yet set on God's Sabbath. Because the writers and readers of Genesis know that the completion of God's Sabbath new walking with you and me got interrupted. And you know some of the rest of the story, because humans are deceived by a dark, chaos-producing power personified by a snake, and so humans forfeit that new-walking, Shabbating rest. And they're exiled out of the Garden of Eden, where they now have to work as slaves to the land by the sweat of their brow with thorns and thistles and pain and childbirth and forces of disorder until they die and return to the dust from which they came. And then they're slaves in Egypt, slaves to an oppressive empire who's grinding them to dust. And so God confronts Egypt and he liberates the Israelites, taking them through the darkness and chaos of the Red Sea. But instead of a seven-day journey to the Promised Land, they find themselves stuck in the wilderness, which is where God invites them in the wilderness to start practicing future rest in the present wilderness. And I gotta say, friends, many of us in this era are in a wilderness. And so this really matters what the text says. It really matters that we understand what it means to new walk with God in our era. Because God invites them in the middle of an era that can feel dry and hard and painful to new walk with him. And how do you practice the future rest in the present wilderness? Aha! Now I'm about to get 21st century practical. How do you and I practice the future rest in our present era? Well, God tells them that every seventh day they're to stop their work so that they can rest and enjoy God's good world. That's right, take a whole day each week to live as if the ultimate rest has already come. But there's more, because the Sabbath is just one of seven festivals that Israel practiced every year, each one anticipating the future and the final seventh-day rest. And so, every 7 years, the Israelites were to liberate slaves, forgive debts, and let the land rest for a whole year. And then, after every 7 times 7 years, was the ultimate seventh-day rest, called the Year of Jubilee, in which if anyone had lost their land or gone into debt, all was forgiven, everything was restored. And what you need to see, friends, is that the weekly Sabbath, the monthly Sabbath, the yearly Sabbath, the Year of Jubilee, it's all about you and me in our era coming into alignment with the created order and pointing toward the hope of ultimate future seventh-day rest. And so I hope you see that by honoring the seventh day in our era, we are not talking only about the observance of one day, although it can certainly begin there. We're talking about, in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 rhythms of our lives, setting aside Sabbaths to remind us about the ideal for all our days. In other words, it's not primarily about what you do or don't do on a Sabbath. It's about what Sabbath calls you to be and do every day. In other words, it's not, oh, it's the Sabbath, I will be kind today, and I'll forgive people's debts today, and I'll care for the creation today. But come Monday, I'm going to make you pay up. And on Tuesday, I'll maximize my profit. And on Wednesday, I'll trample on creation. Friends, Sabbaths are given so we can celebrate a divinely ordained cosmic order built on caring for creation all the time, coming together in community, and exposing the oppressive consequences of leaning into an imperial system that's built on economic stratification and political polarization and social fragmentation and cultural narcissism and exploitive taxes and the slavery of debt. I'm saying weekly, monthly, yearly, every 7 years, every 50 years, Sabbaths remind us that we, you and I, we are still people of Eden. And this is one reason the weekly rhythm of our own church, TNC, our community, is so important. It matters that we gather and remind ourselves in an era that can feel like a wilderness that we have a greater hope and we have greater things to live for that bring about more order and organization and beauty. Because we are presently exiled from Eden, but we are invited to experience a small taste of Eden here. Because Israel's prophets said that exile would end one day and that the ultimate jubilee of freedom and rest would come. But let's think about the scriptures, because generations go by and folks are still waiting. And it's this chaotic and dark point in the story that Jesus is born in Bethlehem. And later, Jesus launches his public mission on a Sabbath day where he reads aloud from the scroll of Isaiah, saying that it was time for all captives and slaves to be released, because this was the year of the Lord's favor, the year of ultimate jubilee. Yes, friends, Jesus was claiming that seventh-day rest would come through him, which is why he said that he was Lord of the Sabbath, which is why he confronted disorder and darkness in all of its forms, liberating people from sickness and sin and even from death itself, which is why he came to put the world to rights and to remind us of God's goodness and to restore this heaven and earth joined together temple, to launch a new era where God's new walking with us again through his Spirit as we await the final day of jubilee. And of course, that has all kinds of implications and conversations for us to have as the days move forward. But I invite you now to pray with me as we conclude this series. God, I pray now for each person listening that they would know first how much you love them and how much you love this amazing world you created. And I pray that we would all know and experience your new-walking, rest-giving, purpose-producing presence. We pray this not only for us, but God, we pray this for our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. God, we pray this for our families and our neighborhoods, our city, our country, and our world. Will you help us to be Sabbath people every day, not just once a week, once a month, twice a year? Because we want to journey every moment of every day with you. And so as Jesus invites us, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. God, we accept this invitation, and we choose to come into your rest today.